back in 2013, more than 1,000 people died when a building collapsed in Dhaka, Bangladesh. Rana Plaza housed at least 5 garment factories. The people there were earning low wages, making cheap clothing for Western fashion chains. After the collapse, the global garment industry came under scrutiny for the human cost of so-called fast fashion. And that's a trend that swept malls and main streets, where clothing stores keep people perpetually shopping by offering new styles every couple weeks. Now, an alternative might be arising. Here's Sarah Nix talking with Elizabeth Klein about fashion, fast and slow.
So a couple years back, I went to a Kmart and bought a pair of $7 black canvas slip-on shoes. And they were so cheap that they just wore out immediately. I think I wore them out in a couple weeks. So I went back to the store and bought the store out of my size. I bought 7 pairs of $7 shoes. And that for me was kind of a wake-up call. But I had been thinking about my closet and my shopping habits for a while, because I, like a lot of people, I attempt to be a conscious consumer. You know, I recycle, I ride my bike when I can, I take public transportation, I try to buy organic food. But then when I would look in my closet, there was absolutely no reflection or thought. I had no idea where my clothes came from, who made them, how they were made. And on top of it, I just had a lot of them. And I had a lot of stuff that I wasn't wearing. I had somehow over the years developed this very transient disposable attitude towards clothing. And that's really what set me on the path to kind of find out how cheap fast fashion had taken over not only my closet, but the closets of every single person that I knew.
And so on that journey, you went to Bangladesh, you went to China, you visited places where these fast fashions are being made. What did you see?
I think two of the most astonishing things I learned on my trip to China and Bangladesh was, first of all, the scale of the global garment industry. In Bangladesh alone, which is one very popular spot for producing clothing now, there's more than 5 million garment workers. In China alone, I'm pretty sure there's over 10 million garment workers. So
wow.
There was this one area in southern China where on either side of the highway, I could see thousands and thousands and thousands of factories. They stretched as far as the eye could see. And the factories were enshrouded in this cloud of pollution. So there are entire cities, districts, tens of millions of people in southern China who are churning out all these consumer goods at an enormous cost to the environment. And it's completely hidden from view from American consumers.
And there has been over the past 10 years this growing demand for ethically produced products, environmentally responsible products. You talked about organic food. How have fashion retailers addressed that demand?
I think that there's been a pretty dramatic growth in the ethical fashion movement or the slow fashion movement. Even since Overdress was released, the hardcover came out in 2012 and the paperback came out in 2013. And I remember when I finished the book feeling kind of frustrated at the lack of alternatives. And since then, there's been a lot of movement toward rethinking and improving the way the global fashion industry runs. And a lot of that had to do with the collapse of Rana Plaza in Bangladesh in 2013, when over 1,000 garment workers lost their lives. I think for a lot of consumers, that was a real wake-up call and a turning point. And I think the other part of it was a reaction to the recession. You had a lot of people kind of looking around and saying, okay, I don't have a lot of money. What can I live without? We've all been on this sort of nationwide shopping binge. Is there a better way to get dressed? So I've seen a lot of new ethical fashion retailers, fashion designers, and even the fast fashion chains are coming out with ethical alternatives to their products as well.
So I've also heard these stories about sweatshops and toxic dyes, and I try
right.
to be a careful shopper. Also, I am on a public radio salary, which means I don't have a lot of money to spend.
Right.
I love beautiful garments, but particularly not living in a big city, it feels like there's no option for me.
Yeah, that's part of the problem that I describe in Overdressed is in the era of fast fashion, we've chased the alternatives out of the market. But I think what's happening now is you have a lot of ethical retailers that are opening up online. I think the slow fashion movement is probably 15 years behind the food movement. So hopefully down the road, we'll have, you know, a Whole Foods or Trader Joe's of fashion.
So it sounds like you think that Americans are a little more willing to pay more for clothes than they were 5 years ago?
Yeah, I think Americans, I think they're very savvy shoppers in the sense that they want value. They're not going to pay more for something if it's not worth more. But if something is made in the U.S., it's made ethically, and it's made out of good materials, and it has a good story associated with it, they'll absolutely pay more for it. And then a couple years ago, or maybe it was just last year, this fashion trend emerged called normcore, where it was just this complete rejection of fashion, where people were just like, you know what, I'm just going to wear like acid wash jeans from the 90s and like a plain t-shirt and sneakers, and I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to follow the trends anymore, which I thought was really, really funny and also part of the backlash that's happening against fast fashion.
You know, over the course of this hour, we've been talking about how it's not uncommon for people to dismiss fashion as frivolous and something not worthy of consideration. And I think in your book, you make a good case for, listen, it has enormous environmental and economic consequences for us. It's a huge industry. But I also wonder if that kind of dismissal of fashion is a roadblock to actually getting people to pay closer attention to where their clothes are coming from.
Yeah, I think that the fact that clothing is so cheap now is part of the reason why it's considered to be frivolous. And the reality is it's a trillion-dollar global industry. And Americans especially spend an enormous amount of time shopping and consuming clothing. And I think that one of the things that is so joyous and fulfilling about the slow fashion movement, it just adds to the experience of getting dressed. If you know the story behind what you're wearing, who made it, how it was made, and trying to convey that to a wider population, it's been sort of a roadblock, but I think that roadblock also existed in the food movement. And then basically what we needed was somebody like Michael Pollan from Omnivore's Dilemma to come along and say, you know what, there's actually a much more fulfilling, enriching way to think about food.
What you're saying reminds me of a dress that was handed down to me from a friend, and she had had it handed down to her from her husband's mother. And it's this beautiful chiffon floral 1920s dress. And it is a precious object for me because I know the story and because I can see the quality. Maybe that's what slow fashion is, having those objects, those garments, be precious.
Absolutely. I think that the connection that you're describing there is something that's been lost. But I feel like even, you know, somebody that who's almost their entire closet is full of cheap clothes, they probably have that one thing like you're describing that, you know, they inherited from someone or was handed down to them or they wore to a special occasion that they're never going to throw away. They do have that feeling about something in their closet. And imagine if that's the way you felt about everything you owned.
Elizabeth Klein's book about fast fashion and its alternatives is called Overdressed. She talked with Sarah Nix. If you're curious about how to get your hands on responsible fashions, visit our website, ttbook.org, for a list of suggestions. Coming up, Vietnamese-born writer Quan Barry talks about her debut novel, She Weeps Each Time You're Born. I'm Anne Strainchamps. It's to the best of our knowledge. From Wisconsin Public Radio, NPRI, Public Radio International.